Welcome to a bonus episode of the Issue Is podcast. This one has nothing to do with politics. It's just a super interesting interview that I wanted to share. In my other job, other than doing the Issue Is, I anchor the Fox 11 news in Los Angeles. And I recently had a sit down with Wolfgang Puck, who is one of the most interesting people I've ever met. If you really think about it, he has driven the way that so many of us eat. He changed the way that restaurants were done in Los Angeles, brought in the open kitchen, unusual ingredients. He was the first real restaurateur to be also a TV chef, first to do a lot of the merchandise and branding and all the rest of it. And you think about, you know, how dominant he has been and how many imitators have come from him. He's an incredibly humble guy. And the most interesting part of his story is how he was really not loved by his stepfather, who told him, you know, that he wasn't going to be successful and all the rest of it. And he found a mentor and how he's mentored other people. It's an amazing conversation. There's a lot to learn from him. And so I thought, let's put this out there and maybe you can enjoy it as much as I did. I didn't intend for this to be a podcast, so it doesn't necessarily sound like a usual podcast, but I do think it's really interesting. So here is Wolfgang Puck. Wolfgang Puck, what an honor. Thank you so much for sitting down with us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
You know, I've been such a big fan. I think so many people here have been such a fan. You're iconic. Even your name is like iconic at this point. But I think it's interesting to sort of start at the beginning of your story and growing up. And you were inspired by your mom's pastry chef?
And my mother was a chef, and she worked in a hotel in Austria. And that's where I really started in the summertime when school was out. So I used to go see her. We lived about 20 miles away from this beautiful lake. And she was cooking there, and I went in the summer and helped her and helped the pastry chef, loved sweets. And then when I was 14, I had to decide what to do. I wanted to be an architect, really, but it was very difficult to go to school there because we were not rich, we were poor. You know, we had meat once a week at home in the wintertime. So going to Vienna to school was not a possibility, and that was the only school where you could become an architect. So I also loved food, I loved sweets, so I told my mother, maybe I'm just gonna do work in the kitchen. And her boss found me a job nearby where I started my apprenticeship when I was 14.
Wow, and what was it about food?
You know, when I was like that young, 14, 15, I wasn't really sure if that's gonna be my profession. You know, it's very hard to have a kid like that. It's like, I have a 14-year-old son, Oliver. If he tells me today he wants to be a movie producer, so I think, yes, for sure. But at 25, he might have a different profession, you know? And for me, it was the same. For me, it was really getting out of the house. I had a really bad relationship with my stepfather, and so I couldn't wait to leave the house. And so that was my prime motivation, really.
And he wasn't a fan of you being a chef, right?
No, he was not a fan. He always told me I was good for nothing. Mm. And he said, you know, cooking is not for a man. Cooking is a woman's job. This is nothing. And he told me after I left the home, he said, well, I remember the day before, the day off, me leaving with going to the train station, and he said, oh, you're going to be back in 1 month, you're good for nothing. Mm. So that's how I packed with my little suitcase going to the train station, him telling me that. And today I think, God, how can anybody do that to their kid, you know?
Right.
Or to anybody, really.
Right. And so then you end up finding sort of a father figure, mentor figure in the kitchen, right, once you leave.
Yeah, so when I left, it wasn't in Austria where I really found my vocation, where I really fell in love with cooking. It was when I was in a restaurant in south of France, in Provence, called Beaumanière. There, Raymond Tullier, the chef and owner, was like an extraordinary human being. I mean, he was a great chef. He was a restaurant owner. He also owned a hotel there. And then he was a writer. He was a painter. He was the mayor of the village. And somehow he became my mentor because he was the first one actually who really liked me. Mm. You know, he really appreciated it. And it started really funny in the kitchen. Like he used to work on the sauce station and I was working with him. And when I made some sauce for a fish or whatever and he tasted it and he said, oh, put a little lemon juice and a little salt in and oil, a little pepper. And I said, okay. And then when he made something, he asked me, taste. I said, oh, Mr. Tullier, a little salt and pepper would be good. And he said, okay, he put it in. And so he really respected me because I wasn't scared of him. Mm. And so when he went on vacation, he said, I want Wolfgang to be in the kitchen. Yet I wasn't a chef or the sous chef or whatever. I was just in one station in the kitchen where he used to be. But he felt comfortable that I'm going to do a good job.
And what was the most important lesson about food itself you learned from him?
Well, I really learned from him was the passion he had about the ingredients. He had gardeners. We had like six gardeners. We made our own olive oil. In November, there wasn't much to do in the restaurant. So we went with the big sheets, put them under the olive trees, shook the olive trees, and then brought them home and pressed them and made the olive oil for the restaurant. I mean, to me, that was so amazing. Or in the springtime, the gardeners came with the best small green beans, or in the summer with the stone fruit, the apricots and peaches, melon and so forth. And he was really a stickler to the product. He only got the best products. Mm-hmm. And somehow he didn't cook recipes the way I was taught. You know, he didn't look in a book and said, okay, today we're gonna go do this recipe. He just made it up as he was going along. And he changed a little bit here and there. And somehow I think, to my mind at least, I said, I wanna be like him. I wanna open my own restaurant. But it didn't. But it wasn't bad in a way, because he also used to go in the dining room to the customers. I still remember he brought Picasso into the kitchen.
Really?
I remember Elizabeth.
With you? Were you there?
I was there. Yeah.
And Picasso walks into the kitchen.
Yeah, he brought Picasso like this. He came in because Giulio also was a painter, but not a really good one. Not by any means like at that level.
Right.
But he was very passionate, and Picasso came in and tasted the sauce and everything, so it was funny. And I remember Elizabeth Taylor came, and Peter O'Toole, I remember. I used to have to drive him to a house where he lived there after dinner.
So he was drinking too much?
Yeah, totally. He had a bottle of whiskey a night. So I think it was, the whole package was amazing, and it appealed to me. For him, the way he cooked, it was really from his heart. It was really from his soul. It wasn't some plan or whatever. You know, he added one day a little saffron, one day a little lemon juice, or one day more pepper and so forth to his sauces. And I really think he was a force of nature. He was like a Renaissance man. And to me, I think the most important thing, and I tell that to young people, you have to find a mentor. And to me, without him, I probably wouldn't be here.
Yeah. And who are you most proud of that you have mentored?
Well, I have so many young people who became so successful with me or when they left. Like I have people like Lee Hefter, for example. He is with me for 25 years. He started as a line cook at the Old Spargo. Now he runs all the kitchens all around the world, wherever we have a restaurant. For example, Ari Rosenson, who is the chef here, he came to me like as a kid. He did a school interview, and then he wanted to work. I said, well, when you go to high school, come and work. So when he was 16, he started to work with us. So and he's still with us and now runs the restaurants here in LA.
Wow.
Yeah, so I have a lot of people who are with me for a long time, and I have a lot of people who left and opened their own restaurant, like Mitch Rosenthal, who is up in San Francisco and has three or four restaurants up there. And so we have a lot of people who are successful even when they left.
Okay, speaking of leaving, so let's talk about you. You leave Europe, you come to America, you come to Los Angeles, right?
Yeah.
I mean, did you speak much English at the time?
You know, I didn't speak much English. So I came to New York first. I didn't like New York. Then somebody offered me a job in Indianapolis. Now, I also used to live in Monaco, and I was a big fan of auto racing. You know, they have the Formula One race in Monaco. But I also heard about the Indy 500. So somebody offered me a job in Indianapolis, and I said, I'm going to Indianapolis. So I took my last $50 or $60 I had left at that time, bought a ticket with the Greyhound bus, and went with the bus to Indianapolis. And I said, that's Indianapolis? I thought it's going to be like Monaco, you know, nothing there, just flat land, you know, right. A few big buildings.
It's not Monaco.
But I had no money to leave, so I had to start to work there. And I was the only immigrant, I think, to immigrate to Indiana, because when I went to the immigration there, I was the only person there. It was like really interesting.
Line.
Yeah, no lines at all, nobody there. But it was a good experience. I didn't speak English, very little really. And then I was the chef of this French restaurant called La Tour, which was the best restaurant in Indianapolis. And I was 24 years old and I was running the kitchen there.
Yeah. And then what brings you out to LA?
Well, the same company actually had a restaurant out here in downtown LA. So they sent me out here. And I didn't really like the restaurant downtown. It wasn't as good as the one in Indianapolis. And then through a friend, I found this restaurant called Ma Maison, which was almost in bankruptcy then. So, but it was Patrick Terrail, who was the nephew of the owner from La Tour d'Argent in Paris. And La Tour d'Argent in Paris is really a monument. You know, it's not even a restaurant. It's more than that. You know, it's really amazing, an amazing place. Beautiful view, amazing food, a three-star restaurant. So I said, okay, I'm gonna start with them. But when I looked at the restaurant, I said, this has nothing to do with La Tour d'Argent. Then I said, but I don't wanna work downtown anymore. So I started to work there. My first paycheck I got bounced. So I said, it never happened to me before. I went to the bank, which was very close on La Cienega. And they said, sorry, there's no money in it. So I went back to Patrick, and then we made a deal that he gave me part of the restaurant for a lower salary. And I started out, and it's there really where I started to meet the people like Orson Welles and Billy Wilder and Gene Kelly, you name all these old actors, and Susie Pleshette. I mean, they all used to come have lunch there or have dinner there. So it was really, in a way, very exciting for me, because when I started, the restaurant grossed like 18 or 19,000 a month. When I left 5.5 years later, we grossed $300,000 a month. Wow. So we really built up the restaurant.
And then comes Spago.
And then in 1981, I left Ma Maison. It was a very bad divorce, really, from Patrick and me. It was like a bad separation. And he told everybody, oh, Wolfgang doesn't know how to run a restaurant, and he will be back asking for a job and so forth. And naturally, I got very nervous. You know, I said, oh, maybe it's true. You know, you always have doubt. I used to wake up in the middle of the night and say, maybe I made a big mistake over there. You know, it was so established. I start this new restaurant. But then we built Spago up on Sunset Boulevard, and I got some investors. And in 1982, we opened, and it was the first restaurant with an open kitchen that didn't exist before.
Right.
We started to make pizzas, but I didn't want to make a regular pizza, margarita or something like that. I said, I'm going to make my own style. So I made pizza with smoked salmon, with truffles, with Santa Barbara shrimp. Instead of making pepperoni pizza, I made a pizza with duck sausage. And I remember Linda Evans used to come twice a week, have a glass of red wine and the duck sausage pizza. And it became really, really popular. I wanted it to be this little neighborhood restaurant. And it became hugely successful. Every star, everybody who came to town, if it was the king of Sweden or the president, they all used to come to Spago. Yet it was a very informal restaurant. The only thing what was really formal was the food on the plate. You know, that was serious, because I already went to the Chino farm in Rancho Santa Fe, picked up the best strawberries, melon, white corn, tomatoes, and brought them to the restaurant. And everybody said, Wolfgang, your food tastes so delicious, has so much flavor. Why? Because I was the only one going to the farm and picking up vegetables. There was no farmer's market around here. So people just ordered and got the vegetable from the big produce companies, and they were nothing, you know.
Right. You did the fresh food, and then came Xinhua.
And then in 1983, I opened Spago in Tokyo. And then I said, you know, I'm tired of doing the same thing. Somebody came up with this property in Santa Monica and said, oh, you should open a Spago in Santa Monica. I said, you know, I'm not interested to do another Spago. I want to open a Chinese restaurant. And I saw the guy going to say, oh, you're crazy, you're not Chinese or whatever. And they said, okay, just open a Chinese restaurant. I know if you will do it, the food will be good.
Right.
So we raised the money and opened in 1983 Xinhua, which was the first fusion restaurant, also with an open kitchen. I even built a counter there where you can sit on the counter and watch the chefs cook. And you know, it's an amazing restaurant because after 37 years, it's still in business. Bella, my partner there, she still runs the restaurant. She's there from the opening. Rene is the chef there. He's there since 30 years. So it's really an amazing place to have all the same people. It's like a family to me.
Why is that, the longevity? Because the restaurant business is notoriously hard, right? And places come and go and come and go, and it's all about flavor of the month, and yet the consistency.
Well, I really think you have to be consistent. And also, I know the food is just part of the equation. You know, you have to have great service. You have to have maybe a good wine list. But more than anything, it's how you make the guests feel when they leave. You know, if you spend $100 a person, you want to feel good about it. You say, God, I spent 2 hours at this restaurant. Everybody was nice. The food was delicious. Then you're going to come back. So if you don't have a lot of money, maybe you come once, twice a year for a special event. If you have enough, you come once a week. Or we have customers who used to come 3 times a week, you know. So I think it's really an important part. And I never forgot that service and the relation with the customer is just as important as the food. And that's one of the reasons also why I go in the dining room and welcome the customer and say hello to our guests and everything, because I feel like they're in my house.
Right. And nobody else really did that before, right?
Yeah, nobody went into the dining room and as the chef and walked from table to table, greeted the guests. And for the guest, it was something totally new, a new experience, you know.
And why the open kitchen? What's the thought behind that?
Well, when I started Spago, so I was the owner of the restaurant, but I also said, how do I gonna manage the restaurant if I'm all the way in the back? So I said, it would be more fun for the guests to see us cooking, and it would be easier for me to see all the guests. So that way I know where they are sitting, what they want, they can come up and talk to me. And I thought it would be better because I really thought at that time, I said, you know, the kitchen is the heart of the restaurant. So why put it somewhere in the back? Why don't put it in the center? So we built a kitchen like a stage, and you have the dessert chef, like Nancy Silverton was on pastries, and I was doing the grill, and Mark was doing the pasta, and Kasuto was doing the appetizer. So we had like 4 or 5 people. I mean, we started with 26 people. 3 years later, we had 80 employees.
Wow. And then you become this big name. You become sort of the first celebrity chef, with maybe the exception of like a Julia Child, right? Sort of a celebrity chef,
you know,
for a new era.
It was a complete different thing, because Julia Child is not, or was not, a restaurant chef. Yeah. You know, she wrote great cookbooks. She was great on television, but she didn't have to worry about running a restaurant.
Yeah.
You know, so it was different. She was on public broadcasting at that time, did Good Morning America and so forth. But I was probably the first chef who actually then went on television. And local TV before, I still remember when I was at Ma Maison, Dinah Shore had a TV show. And one day she comes to the restaurant, has dinner, we did a wine dinner, I still remember, and I sit down and we have a good time. Maybe I drank a little bit too much. And then one day she asked me and says, Wolfgang, I always ask you to come on my TV program. Why you always say no? I said, you never ask me. She looks at me and said, oh, Patrick, that son of a bitch, he never told you. He said, you don't want to go on television.
Oh, wow.
So whenever there was a TV program, I had to prepare maybe a fish or a salad, and he was tossing the salad and talking about the restaurant. And then it really, the break was in 1986. I still remember I wrote my second cookbook. And then Michael Ovitz and Judy Ovitz and Michael Eisner with his wife, they came to Spago. And I think it was Judy's birthday or something, I gave her my cookbook, and it was brand new and signed it. And Mike says, how come I don't know about that? Well, I said, you know, you run an agency, you run CIA, how should you know about the cookbook? He said, I didn't see you on TV, I didn't see you promoting it. I said, yeah, you know, my PR lady from the book company, she tried to get me on Good Morning America and then the Today Show. I said, I went on AM Los Angeles, which was on at that time. But he said, no, you have to do national TV. I said, well, sorry, but I can get on it. He said, what do you mean? So he called up the vice president of Good Morning America there, of ABC News, and said, you know, you have to put Wolfgang on TV. I said, okay. So the guy came out a few days later, talked to me and says, when you want to come to New York and start television? So I started ABC, I started Good Morning America. And then I remember David Letterman had the late show, you know, really after Johnny Carson. And so when I was in New York, they saw me on the show. And then they called me up at the hotel or left a message, said, you want to come and do the David Letterman show tonight? I say, oh, sure, why not? So it started, even he was goofy a little bit, but it was fun.
Right. And then not only that, and then came all the other stuff, like the airport restaurants and the expresses and the other thing that really took your brand to the masses in a way that people hadn't had before.
Yeah, exactly.
And made quick food good.
Yeah, exactly. So we opened restaurants in the airport or in Disney World, for example. And then little by little, we expanded that. So now we are in airports from Sydney to Dubai to Cancun or in Bogota and Shanghai, Hong Kong, also in many places here in the US, you know. And it has become a very good business. Also, I'm very proud is of my work with HSN. We have appliances, pots and pans and so forth, which I sell on HSN. And I think I'm their longest merchant there, over 20 years, and it's still doing really well. And we always come up with new things. We just did a new air fryer, oven type thing, and we come up with new pans. So I think it's exciting for me to do different things. You know, lately we were working on a wine program. We started a rye whiskey, so I like different things.
And so, and we know one of the big projects you have coming up is on the Sunset Strip, right? Which is where Spago originally started, where the House of Blues is. Tell us about that.
So there's this beautiful new modern hotel gonna open next year on Sunset Boulevard called the Pendry Hotel. And it's the same company who runs the Montage. You know, they have the Montage in Laguna Beach here in Beverly Hills and a few more around the world. So we're going to start this hotel and we're going to do the whole food service there. We're going to do a restaurant on top with a beautiful view, which reminds me a little bit the view from the old Spago because we started out on Sunset. We're also going to have an all-day cafe downstairs with a pizza oven and so forth and a nightclub. So it's going to be a lot of fun and excitement. And also what I'm excited about is my son, Byron, gonna run the food service there. He gonna run the restaurants. He went to Cornell, to the hotel management school, worked in some of the best restaurants around the world, really, in Spain, in France, and so forth. And now he's gonna be in charge of something. And I think for me, that's exciting.
Yeah. So what do you think is your most important sort of contribution to the LA food scene? How do you think you've changed?
You know, it's not really for me to say what was important. It what the people felt. You know, and at the end of the day, I said, if I'm a good father to my kids, it's probably the most important thing.
Yeah.
Hopefully a good husband too. But I think I was certainly the first chef who became not only a restaurant owner, but also an entrepreneur who did many different things. Yeah. Like I remember here at the Bel Air, I used to do consulting when I was in the 80s, just after opening Spago and Chinois. And now we are back here running the whole food service here. If you get room service, you get Wolfgang Puck room service, or you hang out in the bar, or you want to do a wedding. So we do a lot of different things.
Okay, so when you're at home, what do you like to eat?
You know, it's so interesting. I actually love to cook at home too.
Yeah.
And I think, to me, even the kids now, like if I cook a steak here at the restaurant and then bring it home, kids will eat it. But my youngest boy, Alexander, will say, Papa, can you cook the steak at home? It tastes better. So it's so interesting. Though the funniest thing at home is my wife, Galila, is a very good cook too for certain dishes. Mm-hmm. Like she makes great pasta bolognese or lasagna. And so when I make pasta bolognese at home and the kids eat it and say, Papa, it's very good. Almost as good as mom's. So mom was there and said, I'm not giving you the recipe.
So if you're going out to eat at a restaurant other than a Wolfgang Puck restaurant, what's your favorite restaurant?
Well, you know, I'm such a traditionalist. I know in LA there's so many new restaurants downtown, in Culver City, everywhere. But to me, I still love to go to Matsuhisa, Nobu's restaurant on La Cienega. It's one of my favorite restaurants. And I go out for Italian food to see Chino Angelini at the Osteria Angelini on Beverly Boulevard. So, and then sometimes I go to the newer restaurants too, but I think for me, these are friends. So I go to visit friends at the same time.
And if you're eating fast food, where are you going? Or do you eat fast food?
You know, I only eat fast food if I have to. For example, if we come home somewhere on a plane with the family, we land at LAX, and there's an In-N-Out burger there. Right. My boys see it, and they say, Papa, I don't want to have dinner at home. Let's get the In-N-Out burger. So then I get one, too, with the lettuce wrapped around and maybe some French fries. And I said, you know, it's pretty good. Yeah. But I don't like to eat in the car.
Okay.
For me, the comfort of the table is an important part. To have a glass of wine with dinner also is an important part. And it can be the simplest food, just some grilled fish or a Wiener Schnitzel or a piece of pizza. I think to sit down, talk about the day, talk about what's going on in the world is a good part.
Sort of to wrap things up, I'm sure you talk to young people all the time. What do you think some of the most important lessons we can learn from your story?
Well, I think my story is really tenacity. I think really is overcoming adversity, because as a kid, as a 14-year-old, you know, when my father always told me I was good for nothing, I'm going to be at home and ask him for money all the time and, you know, so forth. But also taking risks. You know, if I would not have left Spargo, if I would not have left Ma Maison and never opened Spargo, maybe I would have been okay. If I would have never left Austria at 17 to go to France and learn really more and then come to America. I mean, there is a lot of opportunities out there for a lot of people, but you have to grab the right opportunity. But also, I really think the most important thing is if you have passion for whatever it is, if you're a school teacher or if you're a cabinet maker or a mechanic, if you're passionate about what you do, you will become successful.
Yeah, and you certainly have. And what do you see as your legacy?
Well, I really hope that our restaurant company, our family of restaurants, will continue once I'm not here anymore. And I think my son Byron is doing a great job already. He's still young. He's only 25. I'm not thinking of going away anytime soon. But I think I want the company to continue to outlive myself, because then I know I established something meaningful if it can go on without me.
And the only thing I think I forgot to ask about, the Oscars has been such an important showcase for you too. 25 years of catering the Oscars.
You know, we started to do the Oscar party at Spargo in the old time with Swifty Lazar, who was a famous agent. So we did that for quite 10 years or so. And then the Academy came to me and said, Wolfgang, why don't cater the governor's ball? And I said, oh, it might be interesting to cook for 1,600 people. I never did a thing like that. Right. You know, the biggest party at that time was maybe for Marvin Davis at his house for 200 people. Yeah. So 1,600 was quite, for me, something to think about. And I said, you know, it's a great challenge. I'm going to do that now. And we started it, and I think it became bigger and bigger. And now we get publicity all over the world. You know, the Academy Awards is probably the most important event in Los Angeles, next to the Super Bowl, the biggest event on television. So I think being part of it is exciting.
And so this is of all the dishes, is this sort of your most signature dish?
You know, I love change.
Yeah.
I love an evolution. People ask me, how come our restaurant are successful in the long run? Because there's an evolution. We don't do the same dishes at Spargo what we did 30 years ago. Yeah. Most of the restaurants, when you look at them, it was Chasen's, The Pisto, Le Dome, L'Orangerie, Ma Maison, they all went down. They went, I call it the restaurant cemetery, because they didn't change. There was no evolution. And I think, for me, I love change. I love new things, and I love getting everybody fired up and says, oh, cook me something I never had.
What are you most excited about in food today?
I really love what happened in America, that today we have so many young chefs who are really great, and like 30, 40 years ago, being a chef, being a cook wasn't a good profession at all.
Right.
I remember I went to a club once with Niki Lauda, and I went to dance with a girl, and she asked me, what do you do? I said, I'm a cook, I'm a chef. She said, a cook? Yeah. The song was over, she left. She left me at the dance floor, and I didn't walk on her toes or anything. Yeah. And today it would be the opposite. You know, today being a chef is a very respected profession. And I think I'm very proud of that because it really started in the early 80s.
And in large part because of you.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you changed the way people see chefs.
Totally. It's changed totally. You know, chefs write cookbooks, own more than one restaurant, become entrepreneurs. I mean, in so many different directions. So I think we open up the eyes of possibilities, what a chef could be.
To the Rachel Ray's and Giottas and Emeril Lagasse's and all these people, when they see you, do they just give you a big hug and say thank you for clearing the way for us?
A lot of people actually come up to me and say, Wolfgang, if it weren't for you, maybe we wouldn't be here.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's quite a legacy, too.
Yeah.
Many thanks to Wolfgang Puck. And the coolest part after that is he took me in the kitchen and he cooked for me. Check that story out. Watch that. Watch the truffle risotto pasta that he makes for me. It's amazing. That's at youtube.com/AlexMichelson. You can watch it. And we encourage you to watch The Issue Is on TV. More on that at theissueisshow.com. But please leave us a review for this podcast. Let your friends know about it. And reach out to me on social media at Alex Michelson. That's Alex with an E. Thanks so much for listening. Bon appetit.